Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and it's my pleasure to welcome all of you to Tuesday Topics this evening. I'd like to thank Rachel and Debbie for recording this evening. We'd like to express our continuing gratitude to George Byes of Talking Communities, who's just given us a new version of this software to use in our chat rooms. So thank you very much, George. Well, Tuesday Topics tonight is on a subject that many of us have opinions on. I've already seen a number of posts in response to this, which have appeared on other lists when the topic was announced. And so it's obviously a topic that pushes people's buttons somewhat. And the topic essentially is, how do you train sighted people so that they interact with blind people in more appropriate ways? You know, there are lots of things that sighted people do to and with blind people that can be pretty annoying, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of those tonight. But I'd like us to do more than simply focus on horror stories. I'd really like us to try to focus a little bit on some of the things that we might actually be able to do to change approaches. And we also might ask ourselves to what degree some blind people have an impact on the way sighted people treat other blind people because of the way they react. There's a rule in Tuesday Topics, and that rule essentially is that whoever's idea the previous topic was, not only has to be here the next week, and she is, but also gets the opportunity to be the first person to kind of start us off and set some direction in terms of what we're going to end up talking about tonight. And so, it gives me great pleasure to help us to kick off our discussion and perhaps set a tone and a direction for our discussion. A graduate student from I know not where. Misty, the floor is yours.
Good evening, Paul, and to everyone. Actually, I'm a first-year graduate student at Indiana University Bloomington. I think that, you know, as you said, this is a very important but a very controversial topic at the same time. Generally, I guess what I personally like try to do, you know, to educate the sighted community and to, you know, kind of facilitate perhaps more appropriate reactions and interactions between, like, the blind and the sighted in general is just to, it's difficult to explain, and it, I hope it doesn't sound offensive, but to try to project myself, my personality, as normal, as if you will, or as mainstream as possible. Like, I mean, you know, basically, you know, I'll try to, you know, small talk to them and look at them when they're speaking, you know, be very confident in what I'm saying, you know, basically try to portray the image that, you know, we do have some degree of independence and that we are as quote unquote normal, if that's even a good word to use, you know, as any other person, you know, with the exception that we have a sight impediments. So I guess that's my general and very broad take on the whole subject.
Yes, this is Gary Wood. I think that's an excellent topic for tonight. I think that we probably can do a lot of work to try to help the sighted people understand us better, teach them about us. But I guess we have to do it in a right kind of way. I mean, it takes a lot of work on both of our parts, and we have to learn ourselves to sell ourselves to the world in general. We have to learn how to do that and maybe learn something along the way, as well as teaching them how to deal with us, learn how to deal with sighted people again.
Now, we're always going to have issues. All of us are going to have issues with sighted people in general, or in particular, not in general, maybe, well, in general too. We're always going to have difficulties in dealing with them. I have a story I can tell you about today that I probably could have handled better, but I don't know how. You know, maybe I can ask for the group's input on it. I think that the way we teach people who we are, what we are, why we are, is simply to be there, to be interactive in whatever community we find ourselves. You in particular are a graduate student, and one of the things about university level, and graduate students and others in particular, the university level is the very definition of university is a place of learning. So you would be in an excellent position, as all of us who have been university students have been, to teach people what is and what is not appropriate and what you need and what you don't need. And that's going to be different from you than it is from the rest of us. I believe you have low vision as opposed to many of us who are totally blind. And these kind of things, I think, all play in. But I think what I would urge you in the strongest of terms to do is to visit either an Indiana Council of Blind or whatever they're calling the local chapters there, and find out what other people are doing, because people are educated. We're educating people 24/7, trust me. All of us are. I did that in the jury room today. I wasn't chosen for a jury, but I went for a summit, my jury duty. These are the kind of things that teach sighted people, and it's not something that happens. I apologize for that. It's not something that happens all at once. I'm 51 years old. It's been going on for 51 years.
One of the things that Misty says is that by acting as, quote, normal as possible, she believes that we can have an impact on the way that we are perceived by people who are sighted. I suspect there are some of us who might have a question about whether that's accurate. But my question is, do you have good evidence to suggest that that changes people's attitudes, or do you really have to go further and describe the behaviors that you believe are inappropriate?
I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, we have, let's face it, and again, this might push some buttons, but I mean, I'm going to say it straight out. Let's face it, there are a lot of, you know, blind people out there who, quote-unquote, act blind. And just the very fact that you can put it that way says a lot, I believe. You know, in terms of, like, the rocking, the poking of the eyes, the various blindisms that are out there. And I think that, you know, if a sighted person sees someone doing something like that in public, you know, it really, it makes them, you know, if they don't already associate blindness with some other problems, it makes them associate it with those other issues as well, even more. And so, and I mean, I certainly probably could think of other examples if I had, you know, a few more minutes, but I can't think of one in particular. I was talking to a sighted friend of mine, and he was saying that before he met me, he'd come into contact with another blind person who would often sit and rock while she talked, and he often wondered, you know, why is she doing this? And he really thought that she might have had some other issues as well. So, I mean, I think it's just, it's comes down to not acting blind. You know, some people may say, oh, I don't do that sort of thing in public, but I mean, even in a private setting, if you're doing that, it only encourages the kind of habit. And so, yeah, I just don't in any way encourage those kinds of behaviors from any blind person.
What I hear Misty saying is that essentially the treatment that we receive from sighted people is all our fault, and that essentially if only all blind people behaved in an appropriate way, sighted people would treat us in an appropriate way, and there wouldn't be any problems. Is that what I'm hearing you saying, Misty?
No, I mean, it's certainly not as simple as that. I think certainly part of that, you know, the way we're treated comes from that. But also just the fact that, quite frankly, we are a minority group, and a very tiny minority group compared to, like, other, you know, classes of people, if you will, that are considered as minorities. You know, people don't run across blind people, you know, oftentimes, you know, on a daily basis. So I think that, you know, just because they haven't interacted with us, you know, they might not know how to necessarily interact. And also, you know, you have the influence of the media in terms of portraying disability, whether it be positive or negative. You know, that's a completely different different topic there. Well, not different, but a bit of a tangent there. and another topic entirely, but you know, it's a number of factors. I certainly do not see this issue in black and white by any means, but I think that the blindisms are certainly contribute, you know, to some degree, to how people interact with us.
Hi, it's Debbie Hazelton. I think that sometimes we as people who are blind can almost have a kind of blindness phobia or disability phobia where I myself have felt ashamed of other blind people's behavior because I didn't want to be judged accordingly. And I know there are times that I have tried to be, quote, normal, quote, unquote, which really meant that I tried to pass as not blind. I remember someone telling me once that there were blind people who thought I acted like someone who was trying to pass as white because I knew how to do a lot of things maybe that other blind people didn't always know how to do, or I knew how to, you know, fix myself up appearance-wise, or just certain kinds of behaviors where I would quote-unquote fit in. I think the older I get, I think that there's a great deal of there's a great deal of injustice that I've done at times in trying to, quote, be not blind, that I've done to myself and to other blind people who I truly, deeply admire. There are people who I admire, and I know I would love them whether they were blind or sighted or whatever. I mean, I just love them. But the fact that they're blind means I feel closer. I think there are others who, yeah, I probably wouldn't want to be around them, not only if they rocked or whatever, but some of their lack of social skill, lack of social kind of behavior, or certain kinds of social behavior that make me not want to fit in. I also, on the other hand, have known myself to challenge people in the public and ask questions to them when they ask me questions. You know, if they ask me, well, how long have you been like this? Or, you know, something right out of the blue when I don't even know them. I've sometimes said, well, do you always ask people personal questions when you don't know them? I've really done some things that some blind people would not like because they would want to be very polite. And I've stood up and challenged some of that. And I've also done training. And I've found that I don't think some of this stuff can be taught in some of the kinds of ways that I used to attempt to train. I think people who would learn the way that I have tried to train them would need to already be pretty reflective, pretty sensitive. And if they're not, then all the training in the world in the kind of way that I used to do it, encouraging empathy, wouldn't work. I think specific skill training might be more of a way to go.
All very interesting. And I have to admit, when I think of what Misty is saying here, I ask myself, how homogeneous do we want to be? In other words, do we want to approach, and I hesitate saying this because I happen to be a white person, but how would we feel? I do believe there are racial minorities on this discussion, and if so, I'd like, you know, are we going to then go to a person of an ethnic or racial minority and say, is it going to be okay for us to be uncomfortable with them because they may not act the way we do? I don't think so. Yet this is the standard that we are setting for ourselves as blind people. I think that's a very dangerous thing.
Hi, this is Anisio. This is an interesting topic, obviously. I think that I hear what Misty's saying. I actually kind of agree with what she's saying, that I think the way we portray ourselves and the way we act has some to do, perhaps not all, but some to do with the reaction we engender. And this reminds me sometimes of, you know, when I used to live in New York City and people used to say, talking about crime and streets, etc., that regardless of whether you're blind or not, that how you behave and how you walk and how confident you appear has a lot to do with whether or not you become are more likely to become a victim. And I think there are some similarities in those two scenarios.
If someone doesn't want to speak directly to me, but I express what I need to them politely, usually things are fine. I haven't had too many situations where people persist in treating me like I'm subhuman. And I really believe the reason they do that is that they are uncomfortable. So it's not to our advantage to keep them feeling uncomfortable by challenging them every time they speak. You've got to try and put them at ease.
I need to be clear on one thing. I am not in any way, shape, or form saying that blindisms are okay. They're not, especially around other people that might feel uncomfortable. And I was one of those children that, you know, had my fingers in my eyes all the time and all of that. You know, fortunately, that's all gone by the wayside now. But it is something that we must be aware of. And so in that case, Carlos and Misty are both correct. However, if that were all it took for us as blind people to actively and equally enter society, then by golly, we wouldn't have the unemployment rate we do. We wouldn't have the social problems that do exist.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate for a minute in terms of our discussion, because I think we may perhaps be being too nice to people who can see, because I think we're suggesting that most of the change has to happen from us if we're going to have an impact on people who are sighted, and that we have a responsibility, because we're a small minority, to act in some very specific ways so as to minimize the impact that our blindness has on sighted people, and so as to create as large a comfort zone for those folks as we can. I think there are some reciprocal obligations that sighted people have, though, and I'm not sure that we've really focused on those. I think that every human being, whether that person is disabled or not, is entitled to a level of respect that many blind people don't get. And frankly, it doesn't matter to me whether some blind people have blindisms. It doesn't matter to me whether some blind people interact inappropriately with people who are sighted. There are criminals in every society. There are socially maladjusted individuals in every group. Some of them diagnosed as socially maladjusted, some of them not. But it is my view that the rest of the society will generally treat people with a level of acceptance that is not accorded to people who are blind. And I guess I'm concerned about this and believe that the approach that's being suggested by folks tonight is actually avoiding what to me is a major issue. And that is an issue that people who are sighted have stereotypical notions of what those of us who are blind are, and also believe that we're not entitled to the same level of respect that they would show to others. And that's a problem for me.
But the truth is, that's not the way the interaction normally goes. I mean, it seems to be that it's always sort of professional to, oh my God, you're a blind person. And then over time, if you're given any time, then sort of through maybe your interactions with the person, you're able to sort of come up a notch and actually be recognized as a professional colleague. So that's one thing I wanted to say. The other thing is, in listening to this discussion, I also agreed that it's burdensome, I think, to put all of the responsibility for change on the person who is being grievously affected by the change or by the lack of change. I mean, we are living in the 21st century. Supposedly, humanity has moved from some point to where we are now. So why is it that still, as somebody who's blind, you have to struggle almost every day with almost every single sighted person you meet to be able to say, hey, I'm human. Hey, I deserve some respect. I mean, I don't, as far as I know, I don't have any blindisms. I dress rather professionally. That's the life I lead. But there's still always that constant sort of struggle going on. And sort of what I've realized to some extent so far is that I'm not going to bother about educating anybody. I'm not going to bother about trying to convince anybody to accept me. What makes my life sort of easier present is I sort of have a sense of who I am and the way I enjoy interacting with people, and that's the way I approach the world. I go and I do the things I want to do, and, you know, if that's acceptable and if that means that people sort of get who I am and where I'm coming from, that's fine. If they don't, then hopefully I don't really need them for anything else and I can just move on.
Hi, it's Debbie Hazelton. Yeah, I appreciate your last comment and yours, Paul, also. Shelley, I really disagree with you on this one, because I tell you what, I would advocate for anyone I know who is having their opinions or their boundaries undermined. And if I'm going to advocate for others and I'm going to encourage other people to advocate, I sure as heck am going to advocate for myself. And I do not believe that it's my job to put everyone at ease all of the time. I probably do try, probably more than 90% of the time, more than I probably should, because that is exhausting. And I've also found that if I answer people's questions forever and a day, they will never stop. But if I teach them that perhaps it's not always appropriate to be asking questions, they sometimes learn. And I do it a lot with humor. I use humor a lot. And most of the time, I do think that I make some inroads. But no, I think that it's a big mistake to think that it's always our job. Just like even, you know, with dogs, I don't take the harness off for everyone to pet my dog or for every child to learn about a dog. No, I think kids need to learn. It's not always okay to pet every dog they see. And it's not always okay for every sighted person to treat me like a pamphlet or a registration form. It's not.
This is Shelley. I've got to thank all of you, Debbie and Paul, and I missed who the lady was who spoke before you, Debbie. I was getting a couple of audios. I think people were getting cut off or something. But anyway, you've kind of helped me. I think I'm going to have to revise my opinion because I'm sitting here thinking, you guys are right. And it is exhausting, and I find that I do exhaust myself trying to put people at ease and trying to say, oh, no, I'm not offended at all. Actually, I'm really not offended because I'm not uncomfortable with my blindness. I was born with it. It's always going to be with me. It's who I am. I'm not uncomfortable with it anymore. So I'm not offended when people ask me questions.
It's not about always being offended. It's about knowing that I have rights and that sighted people would not tolerate somebody coming up and asking them, hey, tell me what's in your bank account, or tell me about your sex life, or tell me how come you don't have children? People don't ask usually those kinds of personal questions, so why should they think that it's okay to come up and ask me everything they've ever wanted to know about a blind person or anything related, when it doesn't necessarily change the way they treat me? It doesn't necessarily make for more inroads. So it's not a matter of just not being offended. It's that I think they need to learn that I'm a person first, and then I happen to be blind second.
You're absolutely right. How many people would be very offended if you walk up to them and say, geez, how'd you get your hair that color?
I will take the assertive approach. When children have questions, now depending upon where I am and where it is, I will be a bit more indulgent. I've had some really side little remarks from children that would probably make some people, and their parents especially, just blush. A little boy came up and said, hey, that's a nice fishing pole you got there. A little boy about 4, and I said, no, that's not a fishing pole, and I explained what it was. And it happened in a doctor's office. And he called out to me from across the room, and the silence you could have cut with a knife. Then I said something, I don't even remember what, and got everybody laughing, and then I explained to him about my cane. So I do try to take my approaches where I think, I try to use the approach I think is necessary.
This is Carlos Montes from Tallahassee. One of the things I wanted to say was I do agree that there is some sort of responsibility that needs to fall under the sighted person as far as learning about blindness and these kinds of issues. But again, I'm going to stress it's important that we get out there and educate. I don't think there's enough of that going on. There's too many. I believe that there are too many blind people that don't get out, and there are people that have never seen blind people before, and people are not going to go and search and educate themselves unless they have to. I mean, that's the kind of society we live in. You know, some kids may want to go. May not want to go to school, you know, and then they go because they're forced, you know, because they're forced to. So, you know, we do deserve the respect, but I mean, you know, I don't necessarily know that we're entitled to anything, you know. I mean, unfortunately, we live in a sighted world. We always will, but in a sense, it's our job to walk in there, you know, if we're going to a job interview, for instance, to walk in there with the confidence that we can do the job and do the educating, because if we get apathetic, that is not real healthy, in my view.
Hi, it's Debbie Hazelton again. I do feel I'm entitled to respect. I believe we all are, not just blind, but all human beings are entitled to. It doesn't mean that I feel I can demand anything, but I do feel that I am entitled to respect. B, I do not live in a sighted world. If I lived only in a sighted world, I would not be here. I live in a world that includes me, and I expect that. And I also don't, just like I don't believe that I live in a man's world, I live in a world that contains both men and women, and that is the world that I expect to live in, and that is the world that I expect to be treated as a person in.
You go, girl. I have a question, and one of the games that sighted people play, and that's really the only way I know of to express it, because I really believe that that's what it is, and it is one of the ones that makes me the angriest. You meet someone, and maybe you even have a long conversation with them or whatever, but you don't run across them again for 3, maybe 6 months. They walk up to you and say, guess who this is? That, it pushes several buttons with me, and I usually don't handle it well. I try to handle most situations well, but I've gotten to where with that one, I just tell them, I don't play guessing games.
I guess I've been known to say, who cares? One of the things that I find most amusing is they'll sometimes walk up and they'll put their hands over your eyes and they'll say, guess who this is? Which kind of doubly makes the point. But they wouldn't do that with a person who could see. And we've all, over the past little while, cited some examples where I think that the absence of respect from people who can see is there. I guess I don't think that blind people ought to accept all of the responsibility. I don't go so far as ever being prepared to believe, and I guess that's why I think the lady from Boston's absolutely correct. I don't go so far as to believe that we as blind people will ever be fully accepted in a sighted world. And that's one of the reasons I don't live in, quote, a sighted world. I think that they are always going to perceive us as different, just as they will perceive members of other minorities as different. And there will always be areas where we will not gain full acceptance, and where they'll draw the line. It's kind of like the remark that used to be made about African Americans. You know, it's lovely to have them as neighbors, but I wouldn't want my daughter to marry one. And I think there's a lot of the same attitude out there towards those of us who are blind in the sighted community. And I guess I'm not sure that it does very much good to do these massive education campaigns such as AFB launched with "What do you do when you meet a blind person?" and other such programs, because I'm not sure that they really have an impact. They may give people some ideas about what to do, and they may help to increase the comfort level of people who can see. And that's probably not a bad thing. If they're done well, they can also increase the expectations, perhaps, that sighted people have of blind folks. I know that with one of these training films, I cringe because it is regarded as a matter of absolute law that you are supposed to use the clock method for telling a blind person where his stuff is on a plate. And frankly, Scarlett, I don't care. I don't want to know, and I don't really think it's a very appropriate thing for most blind people to be told. But that may be a controversial statement. I have no idea. I know I don't like it, and I know I certainly don't like somebody saying that the only way to treat blind people is to do that. Again, I think that the kind of thing that we have to begin to demand is that we not be treated as a homogenous group, but that we be regarded as individuals and be accepted or not accepted on the basis of how we interact with others, but also beginning with the assumption that we're human to start with, and only when we demonstrate that we're subhuman by our behaviors should we be treated that way.
When I was about 12, I think, the first time I ever heard of the clock method, I'm 56, and I don't know whether, you know, whether I was just in the dark ages as far as my awareness, but, and I was 12. But somebody asked me, some friends of ours very nicely, pleasantly asked me, said, "Do you eat by the clock?" And I said, I don't know what the heck he was talking about. I said, "Well, we eat when we're hungry." And when people start pointing out where the food is, I tell them, "Oh, don't worry about that. By the time I get through eating, it's going to be all mixed up, and I will be moving it around on my plate, which I do. It'll be all mixed up anyway, so don't worry about it."
You know, getting back to the point of, like, whose responsibility it is, in all frankness, I really do believe that if we don't take responsibility in educating people, you know, who's going to care to do so? Frankly, it's you know, we have the disability, so therefore I think the onus, you know, rests on us primarily to do the education. And I think, again, getting back to Paul's point of, like, you know, the fact that we do deserve to be treated as individuals as opposed to subhuman, or something along those lines. I think that, again, a lot of that goes back to a lot of different causes, but particularly the media, I mean, and their portrayal of us. And I think, again, you know, it's really good not only for us to be out there and participating in community events so that people see how we interact with people, but also to specifically get involved with the media, you know, in whatever way we can, whether it be doing, like, interviews, whether it be whatever. Because, I mean, oftentimes you either see one of two things being portrayed in relation to disabled individuals. Either they're portrayed as, you know, poor and suffering and, oh, you know, I feel so sorry for them. Actually, three things. B, they're shown as accomplishing, you know, things in their lives that most people that are able-bodied you know, think, oh, that's nothing. But yet, you know, we're somehow, you know, the fact that we can go to school, hey, imagine that, is somehow elevated to the status of incredible. Or three, you know, there's this idea of the super crip, as it were, being portrayed. I mean, that's probably some of you have heard of the term. It's a general term used for, you know, when the media portrays, you know, this blind person climbing Mount Everest or whatever. And certainly that's an accomplishment. But, I mean, you know, we've got to be out there talking to the media. We've got to be, you know, promoting their portrayal of us in a more positive light and in a, you know, in more normal settings and it, you know, everything like that. So I think that you know, if you want to get to the reason for the way we're treated, I think that one is a big part of it. And you know, the minorities, at least in this day and age, in the media, are not portrayed like that. I mean, they're taking on more conventional roles and more diverse roles. And I think that Dave had made the point earlier that, you know, that we should be accepted as who we are, since, you know, we accept other people of other races as who they are. Well, when a, for example, a white person comes up to a black person, they're not usually thinking that they also have a mental problem or a hearing problem like people do when they come up to us. I mean, for some reason, you know, able-bodied people associate blindness with every other disability under the sun, whether it be mobility impairment, again, hearing impairment, or mental disability. So I think it's kind of a different issue. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say that we're comparing apples to oranges, but I would say that, I mean, these are slightly different issues. So
I really have gotten very tired of doing media stuff. I've had several different media pieces done over the years, and I cannot believe how many times I end up feeling misquoted or like something is taken way out of context. I mean, I spent 3 days with somebody who wanted to do a major story on me for this Sunshine magazine, and I just was mortified. I knew this guy pretty well, too, and there were so many misquotes and things just taken out of context. And I think the last piece I was in, it said that I suffered from blindness. And, you know, it would just make it sound like I walked and talked and how wonderful. And I don't appreciate doing that and having myself out there in a way that is misrepresented. And it kind of gives people more patronizing, more ways to patronize and condescend. So I'm not sure that the media is the answer. I don't know that I won't do it when there's a particular reason to, but I don't like it. I really don't like it at all.
We're at an interesting place, because it seems to me that we actually, for the first time, have a genuine disagreement, and probably will not end this program close to being at a point where we reach consensus in terms of an agreement about how we ought to proceed. And I'm going to try to characterize what I perceive the two sides as. One side says whether there is a major problem with the way that sighted people interact with us because we're a small minority, because of the adverse impression that the media's portrayal of us has made. We have the responsibility to get out there and educate, because essentially if we don't, nobody else will care to, and so the problem will simply persist and get worse. And I think the other side that's out there says that while that's accurate, there are responsibilities that operate for people who are sighted, and that if we go out and educate in the way that's being espoused by the other group, what will tend to end up happening is we will continue to make it seem to the sighted community that it's okay to treat us in a different way than they would other minority groups, or in a different way than they would expect to be treated themselves. That is, we would be perpetuating what those of us who are on the other side would regard as a double standard. Regardless of which side we come up with, though, I think we still need to begin to focus a little on what we can do. Obviously, one side says that we ought to go out and educate, 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 educate. But if it's really a problem that sighted people don't behave appropriately or don't interact with us appropriately, what should be done about it, by whom, and is it likely to make a difference?
This is Shelley. I'm sitting here thinking, and it's 2005. We, as people who are blind, live in every state of this country. We live in most of the major cities and many of the small towns. And I have to say, in thinking about it, if people are not educated to, they're not aware of us by now, they're not going to be. They don't want to be. And I don't, it's probably not up to us to educate. It's just up to us to be. And we're not going to go away. So they're going to have to find a way to deal with us, just like we have to find a way to deal with our everyday lives. So do they. But I'm not so sure we can educate them, because I don't believe they want to be. They know, but they're afraid. It's like they don't want to deal with any disease. And I think many people, that's what they believe, truly. That is the disease. That's totally wrong. But there are people that you will never convince otherwise. So I'm really not going to try and educate them. I'm just going to be.
Well, I kind of lean that way myself, Shelley. Put another way, perhaps, this is Pam, by the way, put another way, in my case, perhaps as we get to know people one at a time, two at a time, ten at a time, however many, just little bit by bit by bit, because very often, I mean, some people won't let you get that close, but some people, once they get to know us, I mean, I've had people say to me, gee, until I met you, I was afraid of blind people. I said, did you see that movie? And I, oop, you know, and they got, now I know I don't have to do that. I think maybe just little bit by bit, maybe that's the best education we can give them.
I try to, again, get to know people and, just to, again, kind of be there. And, I've gotten on so many occasions from people, and some people may consider this a compliment. Some people might have other opinions on it. But from a lot of people, when I get to know them quite well, they have been talking to me, and, you know, when we've been engaged in some kind of conversation or other. And they'll ask me about something, you know, visually oriented that I might not, you know, in terms of the, you know, information about it that I might not have access to. And I have to point out, you know, I can't see so-and-so or whatever. And they will often tell me, oh, I almost, you know, completely forgot that you were blind. You know, I've gotten that on so many occasions. And, I mean, in a way, it is a compliment, and it is a good thing in the sense that they're not focusing primarily on my blindness.
I think we've explored this issue quite a lot, and there's certainly been lots of interesting comments, I think. Someone in a text message said that when someone says, gosh, I forgot you were blind, it suggests that the way that people felt about you before was that they perceived you as inferior, and now, because they've gotten to know you better, they no longer perceive you as quite so inferior, and you're more like them, which in a way demeans a person's blindness, at least to a degree. I've always felt that wearing dark glasses was or is not an appropriate thing for a blind person to do unless their eyes have some kind of significant issue in terms of the way they look. Just being blind doesn't seem to me to be a sufficient justification for wearing glasses. What we really haven't done, though, and I guess I'm sort of sorry, is arrived at some things that we can do to try to make things better. Clearly, organizations like AFB have done training. Clearly, local chapters and state affiliates and national organizations like the NFB, like the ACB, are all, to a degree, mounting campaigns that are attempting to change people's perceptions of blind folks. One of the approaches that's taken by the National Federation, for instance, is the Kernel Books. And while there may be loads of things that one dislikes about the Kernel Books, I think that one of the things that they do is they try to portray blind people doing a pretty broad range of things, and try to portray often, I think, blind people going against the stereotypes that many sighted folks have of them. I suppose from my perspective, and I will let people comment on some of the things I'm about to say before we end tonight's program, but I suppose my perspective is that one of the things that we need to do is we need to challenge the media more often. Misty commented right at the beginning and continually throughout the program that the media's portrayal of us is inappropriate. How much do we really try to change it? How many interviews do you actually hear with blind people on the radio or on television where blind people say right out loud, you know, I know you're going to misquote me. I know that you're going to slant this article inappropriately, and I want people to know up front that that's what's going to happen. Because actually, if you said that, they'd probably quote you correctly because it would sell papers. I think then that we have a responsibility to challenge the media when they're inappropriate. I didn't like Blind Justice earlier this year. There were a lot of blind people who did. I thought that the Extreme Makeover program on the poor blind gentleman in the Tampa St. Pete area was very inappropriate and suggested piles of stereotypes. It didn't result in an ACB resolution, and it didn't seem to exercise very many people on Tuesday topics when we discussed it, but it did result in a pretty substantial resolution at the NFB convention this summer, which passed. So, again, challenging the media. I think another thing that we can do is we can, in a polite and appropriate way, demand the respect that we ask for. I think if a question is inappropriate, it's okay for us to actually say to someone that's not an appropriate question. And I think it's also okay if we occasionally embarrass somebody in return. I'm really bothered by somebody saying, how can you read that Braille? And my response is usually, gosh, how can you read that print? And I guess that I truly think we need to begin to challenge some of the stereotypes and force people who can see to put away some of the stereotypes, regardless of where they've come from, whether they've been arrived at by seeing blind people who act inappropriately, whether they've been arrived at because of media portrayal, or whether they've been arrived at simply because of preconceptions that they acquired growing up. I think we have an obligation to change those. I don't think it's sufficient to simply be. And I think the other thing that we can perhaps do, and this may be a little bit more controversial, is I think that we as blind people need to get out into the community and begin to interact in ways that have nothing to do with blindness. Some folks talked about that earlier, and I think they're absolutely right. The more that people who can see perceive us getting out there and utilizing society, the more we are likely to be perceived in some different ways. And I think the other thing that we truly do need to do is to demand to be included and not to accept the notion that it's okay for us to be isolated and for society not to make provision for us to be fully included. I think the person who suggested earlier that we as blind people tend to be perceiving ourselves as inferior and tend to undersell ourselves even as compared to other disabilities. I think you're absolutely correct. And I think we really need to examine the degree to which we contribute to the stereotyping of ourselves by not actively seeking to alter those stereotypes.
Well, I think it's all been an interesting experience tonight. I think I agree with most of what everybody said tonight.
Getting back to certain questions from the sighted community being offensive or inappropriate, I will certainly agree that there are questions out there that fall under that category, certainly more than, our fair share of them. But I think that, my philosophy is, even if it might be inappropriate, if it really crosses the line, I'll say something. But, if someone asks, how do you find your food, whatever, whether it be an adult or a child, I try to, while it may push my buttons, as it were, and might even offend me greatly, I will try to explain to them in a loving and reasonable way, try to give them an answer as to what, they had asked, because I think really the more opportunities there are to educate, the better. If an opportunity presents itself, whether it be on, from person to person on the individual level or on a, more organizational level or group level, I jump at that. I take it and I run with it.
I'm glad to hear that I was not the only person who thought that extreme makeover was a bad idea, inappropriate.
I think that as much as we can give positive messages out there, and I don't mean positive like, oh, we're just wonderful, but I mean positive messages for change, and that we do it in a united way and do it in ways where we affect change at an organizational level.
The way that the education formal has been going on hasn't been having as much of an impact as we would like it to, because again, it feels that a lot of it falls on the individual to then sort of go out and try to change the world. And if you think about sort of the way other minority groups have changed, and actually let me say one thing. I think it's interesting that in this discussion people are suggesting that folks who are blind are actually part of a minority group. I don't know if that's something that a lot of people would be willing to really freely say or really truly believe. But assuming and accepting, and if you say that folks who are blind are part of a minority group, then I think one way that we might approach the whole concept of educating the general public would be to look at some of the ways that other minority groups did this. I want to tell you quickly about a judge who came to Boston from South Africa who was totally blind, who is now on the Supreme Court of South Africa. And he made a point which I thought was really important, which is he talked about the fact that as a member of the African National Congress, he didn't join because he was blind. He joined because he believed in the things that the African National Congress stood for. And he became an involved and active member. And then as that organization sort of took over, he then said, hey, we need to talk about my rights now as somebody who's blind. Once you've sort of built those relationships, can you then say to folks, okay, now let's start talking about what does, community inclusion really mean? And how do you do that? And isn't it better to be doing that from a position of somebody who has a lot of credibility as a member of this particular group?
This is Shelley. I wonder why it is so easy for some groups and so difficult for other groups.
It's Debbie Hazelton again. I've been told that we're not really even considered a minority, which I think is interesting. It's kind of like we're not even recognized as being on the bottom step.
The problem comes down to the fact that we are a smaller minority than, say, the black community, Hispanic community, whatever, and again, it comes down to the simple, supply-demand sort of economics. We are not recognized as a minority in a lot of cases. I mean, take academic scholarships, for instance. I mean, you have all these minority scholarships and fellowships, both at the graduate and undergraduate level, yet they cater primarily to racial minorities. I think the disabled community is, in fact, the unrecognized a minority, not just blind community, but the disabled community as a whole would fall under that category.
I guess I want to end by spending just a moment talking about a point that someone raised earlier, and that is they suggested that one of the things that we ought to perhaps do is take our cue in terms of how to interact with society from the way that other minority groups have done that. And I think that the first thing that all other minority groups did was to spend a lot of time coming to terms with who they actually are. And I think that it would be accurate to say that whether you're talking about feminists or black power activists or Hispanics, they had to do as much work educating their own populations as they did educating the rest of society. And it truly wasn't until a critical mass was reached where those minorities perceived themselves as truly aggrieved and as deserving of changing society and truly discriminated against in the way that they were being treated, that there was a real push to make things change. And so I suppose that what I take away from this is that the kind of ambivalence that was demonstrated tonight on this program by many of the folks who were here is an indication of the work that we as organizations of the blind need to do. And I think that many of the issues that have come up tonight hopefully will leave many of us with things to think about. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on ACB Radio's Tuesday Topics this evening, and I'd like to thank a group of folks who turned up tonight to discuss this issue for some really lively and exciting discussion. I hope that everyone will tune in next week to Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community. Good night. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will explore what may be a fairly controversial issue. How do blind people treat each other? Are we respectful of the way each other are, or do we tend to want to trash each other, either face-to-face or behind each other's backs? Do we interact well with each other? Are we supportive of blind people who don't live up to what we believe are appropriate blindness standards? Are we helpful to our brothers and sisters, or do we tend to run 25 miles to avoid them? That's the topic we're going to explore next week. Do we trash, or do we not trash? Join us for this discussion of how blind people interact with each other on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.